Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, Jennifer Zimmerman. Jennifer is the Senior Marketing Advisor and former Chief Marketing Officer at General Catalyst. She's also the expert in residence at X&O. Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Christian. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, really looking forward to having you on. When I saw your name come across my desk and I was reading through your background, I was like, oh, you know, in, I think you said it a moment ago before we hit record, you're this really unique vantage point within our ecosystem. And my sense is that our audience are going to love to get your perspective. So with that, if we can just start, you know, marketing background, how did it start and how did it get to where you are today?
Yeah. So, it's very interesting. You know, I kind of always feel it as I've been in and around the venture space as a bit of an oddity. But I think increasingly sort of a skill set that many founders and many in the VC ecosystem are starting to sort of wake up to. Mm-hmm. My career began in the advertising industry. I spent about 35 years in the ad business as a brand strategist, working over the years for just about every Fortune 100 company there is on global brand platforms, for big brand platforms for big global brands. Everything from Disney to Clorox to Intel to JCPenney to Chase to Generali to Hershey's. And probably at the last part of my career, American Express, where I had the opportunity to work very closely with Ken Chenault, who was the former chairman and CEO of American Express, and his marketing team on repositioning Amex from being a brand that was about membership, this idea of belonging, into something more active and aspirational for a next generation of users, which is this idea of backing. And worked very closely with Ken, who was extraordinary as a leader and a person, wound up developing that as a global platform. When Ken left Amex to join General Catalyst as their chairman back in, I think it was 2017, he reached out to me asking for my help in helping General Catalyst tell their story in a more compelling way. And again, you know, like so many venture firms, the business was very strong, but the brand was less well developed. Ken was quite insistent, given his background and his prowess in these things, that there was really an opportunity to tell their story, not just sort of what makes them different, their point of difference, but their broader point of view, and start to bring together a much more professional, cohesive marketing muscle to GC and their portfolio companies. So I joined in 2021, quite reluctantly, I will tell you. No, I'm like knowing very little about the venture space, knowing very little about the marketing assets that are used, earned media, PR, sort of speaking engagements and the like, historically have been outside of my wheelhouse, with a steep learning curve. I think I Googled every seventh word for the first 3 or 4 months of my tenure there, but really began to develop an appreciation for how spectacular the business is, but how, frankly, undifferentiated firms are from one another. And I worked in a lot of parity categories, including laundry detergent and credit cards and everything in between. And I actually am struck by how many VC firms say the same things, they're in the same deals, they have the same sort of relationship bent or different elements. They're very kind of well-trod themes. And so it was just a fascinating exercise to be able to bring my marketing muscle to them to help strengthen, elevate, and magnetize their brand for a next generation of founders. And my tenure as CMO there was 4 years, and I'm very proud of the the lift we were able to create both in their visibility and the clarity of their story. But
Wow.
in doing that, I started working with some of GC's portfolio companies
Okay.
tangentially and began to realize there was a pretty significant opportunity gap for many of those early stage founders who have a need to tell their story and build some foundational assets, but have none of that capability or
Yeah.
access to that capability in their company or in their network. And so in my new life as a advisor and as a expert in residence with X and O, I'm really trying to bring some of the unlock that creative firepower for next generation founders. And it's been a fascinating kind of new chapter of engagement for me.
Okay. I mean, I have a bunch of questions, but before I start unpacking stuff, X and O, can you give us a little bit of insight into the value prop and
Yeah,
how you're
it's amazing.
offering
X and
value?
O is a company that's founded by Eric Segal, who's a former creative partner of mine back in my advertising days, and Brett Banker, both of whom are probably genius, earnest, but entrepreneurial in their own bent. And they came out of the advertising business, as I had, with an understanding of how screwed it is, sort of, how slow, how bureaucratic, and how increasingly locked away the best talent is for certain assignments. So they kind of grew up in that space and had the bravery and the vision to say, there's got to be a different way to do this. And so what they created is essentially a marketplace of top talent that they can deploy in a very accelerated fashion for clients on a project basis to really bring solutions that are powerful, but done in a fraction of the time at a fraction of the cost it would take to kind of access that in the agency world. And so when they originally reached out to me, it was ironically as an expert in their network, could I help them bring strategy vision to life? I saw them and I said, I have a lot of early stage founders who could use not just a strategic product that I give them, but a creative product done in at the speed of venture, at the speed of early stage. And so I joined them. I was absolutely magnetized and enamored by their offering, really impressed by the caliber of folks they've been able to identify in their network. I think now it's about 375 people who are activated for different assignments based not on their availability, but their expertise. And we've been able to, we've done several projects for some of GC's early stage founders and others, and it's been exceptionally well received. A lot of value unlocked in a very short period of time to sort of create some of those foundational brand assets that are frankly so underdeveloped in this space.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. Fortune 100.
Yeah.
I heard a combination of B2C and B2B.
Both, yes.
Help us, so when I can imagine every single client is unique, and part of that is who are they selling to. When you put on your glasses to start examining who you're working with, how do you look at end users? How do you look at existing company history, messaging as you're starting to form up, how you want to pull a client forward?
Yeah, it's really interesting because a lot of those flags are false flags in my world, and there's a big difference in from my perspective between product marketing. How are you going to sell a product? To whom? What cycle and what elements? What price point? What specs? And brand marketing, which is really about what's the larger proposition here. And so when I start a project, I developed a framework years ago when in the agency world, which I coined as master branding. But frankly, I stole it flagrantly from storytelling convention. I think it was innovated by Aesop, right? The moralist. And it's really about what's the plot twist, what's the enemy, and what's the moral of your story, And then how does that actually begin to frame up a platform idea that sits well above the product marketing funnel, right? So it really, and again, I've used it time and time again for just every brand I've worked with, and it's a really powerful element for early stage venture startups because they're naturally trying to tell that story in the world to potential employees, to potential investors, to enterprise customers, to, from a selling standpoint, like they're trying to tell that story in a way. And it really begins to create a pointed framework to sort of inform everything that's done. And just, it sits at a different altitude. I'll give you a great example. One of GC's portfolio companies that I had a privilege of working with is a company called Fourier. They are on-site green hydrogen production. Probably one of the most complex categories that you can imagine. And when I had an opportunity to originally meet with the founder, Siva, their materials were all about how this gets, what this is, and how this gets delivered. Absolutely critical to, underpin a selling environment. But my question was, why is this and for whom is this? Like, what's the larger point of view there? And we created this platform about engineering audacity, their true north and being able to articulate that, a belief that that the precision of engineering and all of its magnificent scientific elements can really unlock audacious ambition in the world and do things that were never possible. And I think by creating that, again, still sits on top of a very powerful, complex, and frankly, undecipherable product narrative for me. But it's something that really was a true north for that company that could be a magnet for new talent, could be that had a larger thought there that sat about those elements. So when the value that I can add, and then Xeno came and did the full designs of those other elements, was able to bring that to life creatively. The value I add sort of sits at a different altitude than what would normally be understood of like who's using the product and how does it work and sort of what are the channels of distribution. Important for the downstream stuff, but much less relevant for the initial sort of building blocks of a brand platform.
Interesting. So let me, I'm a marketing novice and I rely on experts like you to help get the messaging out. But in my very simple world, I've always thought there was a conflict between two different trains of thought that I've consistently hear. One is David Ogilvy, who I and you can correct me if I'm wrong, please, who said something to the effect of, like part of powerful marketing is helping your buyers, understand why. I'm gonna paraphrase, why you're awesome. I can make shirts better than anybody else. And I'm gonna tell you how. And I presume the idea is we value our dollars, we want the best, and you've now showed me that you are. And the other line of thinking that I consistently hear is, well, you know what? People really just buy outcomes and not really the mechanics. So I may have a lot of bad analogies, Jennifer, but one of the ones I'll use is like, my son used to play lacrosse, and you get a lot of him and his teammates would go into Lacs World, and they selling them on carbon fiber shafts for their lacrosse sticks. But really, all the things that these kids care about is how many goals they're going to be able to make.
Is it a winning advantage or not? Right.
That's it. And so this seems at odds, this idea of, hey, unpack the mechanics for me, but just, or two, just tell me what I'm going to get if I engage you.
Yeah, I think of the way I think about it, there's two elements, there's two levers you can pull, right? There's point of difference, and then there's point of view, right? Now, when you have both, if you have a fundamentally differentiated product, and you have a larger point of view about why that matters in the world, those things are really powerful. What happens in any category is that parity begins to creep in. And I think it's super interesting in the venture space, and in the early stage space, so many companies like, I'm the only one doing this, and this is an innovative element. That point of difference is hard to find, and it's certainly hard to sustain. right?
Right.
As the next wave of competitors
Yeah.
come in, the next wave of disruptors come in. So having that point of view, that larger idea or ideal, is often a really powerful moat to defend against the inevitable periodization of categories. And it's a really valuable guide to inspire next generation innovation around what your product wants to be next, right? So it's both a defense against the erosion of differentiation and a guide to sort of help to inspire the next level or generation of innovation. But I think so many, and Dave Ogilvy, brilliant, but he lived in a different era, where attention was easy to come by. And I think increasingly, I don't know about you, but in my feeds, as I'm sold just about anything that someone, the algorithm thinks I will buy with one click, increasingly the things that captivate me are ideas that sort of speak to how I see the world and not just how I choose between products, And so I think it's an interesting sort of different layer, but you're not alone, Kristen. I think so many of the marketing narrative folks are that live in the space that you're in and portfolio companies that we support are desperately trying to have a product a product differentiation and forget that larger, that broader point of view.
So if I understood correctly, it's not really binary, more of an evolution of where the company is on its trajectory
Right. And
as
they should be, they should, you can have, if you're American Express and you relaunch Platinum to be a really high quality product, that is extraordinary and delivers a lot of value. And you have the broader platform is that the powerful backing of American Express, an idea that, don't live life without it. If you have the idea and you have the goods, incredibly, it can be a 1-2 punch. It's when one, and again, if you just have product differentiation without a larger point of view, you really need, there's no gating factor. There's no moat around competitive entry, and it can accelerate competitors' advantage.
That makes good sense. Okay, so let's carry this forward then to back to General Catalyst. So, a lot of founders in particular, they just see the VC. They don't appreciate the VCs also have their own clients, limited
Yep.
partners. And so yes, you made reference of how does a VC firm differentiate itself amongst the other, thousand some odd investors, early stage investors that are out there. But at the same time is how do they do that with their own limited partners? So how did when you were thinking about formulating the strategy for General Catalyst, how did you take founders and LPs into consideration as you were thinking about the firm's branding?
Yeah, I mean, look, like any company, you have multiple audiences, right? And oddly, versus other companies, the people, your partners are your product, right? You have a point of view, and then you have individual people and track record, right? And so really figuring out how to, number one, raise the profile and create more of a provocative perspective. And again, not just talking about what has been done, which is such the playbook, the sort of like the funding announcements are sort of like the we're in blank and we're in X and we're in Y, and well, so is everybody else. That kind of steady drumbeat. Rather, what is your point of view, right? If brands are based on a provocative point of view about the world, really starting to develop provocative points of view about where the world is going to be a magnetic force for both founders and for limited partners. At the end of the day, people want to know not what you've done necessarily, although that does help, but what you think and sort of the bets that you're making. And so a lot of the work was really getting MDs comfortable with being the product, with being the spokespeople, which is not always a natural tendency, and really finding the right forums to bring that forward. So,
So is that fair to say it's less, not necessarily about being controversial, just as it is vocal.
Yeah, and like taking the right vantage point. You know, so much of the decision making, as you know, that happens in venture is about this particular company and about this particular space and about this particular time and about this particular team, all of which are material and magic, in my opinion. So, you know, like I sat and marveled at that. But underscoring that is a larger perspective about where the world is heading, where it needs to head, where it doesn't need to head, and really sort of trying to tease out a larger perspective around that, under which all of these brilliant and thoughtful investment decisions sit, and really trying to tease that out. Again, elevate, bringing everything to a different altitude, which is sort of the way I view the world to begin with. So it was really interesting to see those sort of themes and those theses come to life, you know, and it on the back of some brilliant people and brilliant investors who I had the privilege to work, you know. So I can take very little credit for the genius of it. I can take a lot of credit for the exposure of that genius.
Well, I mean, you're there for years, and I
Yeah.
know who they are, so high five.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you mentioned you spent a lot of time working with founders. You know, what would be really valuable is, you know, there's no shortage of, you know, mediums today to engage with potential buyers. You know, historically, that's been print, radio, television. Today, I mean, I think predominantly the internet, maybe ads within mobile devices, but still it's the internet.
It's largely social, it's largely feed, it's largely your own channels, right? Website, things like that.
And so, you know, as an expert, what's your assessment? Like, if there was a one-on-one or a direction that, you know, you can leave the founders of the audience today just to say, you know, it's the 21st century, this is how I'm going to encourage you to think about getting the word out.
Yeah. I think first and foremost, it's like figure out, like, get your foundational elements together, you know, and spend the time and energy to sort of create this sort of the building blocks of a brand, right? And I think people jump to channels. It's like, which channels are less relevant? If you have the wrong message in the right channel, it's the wrong channel, right? And really refine, make sure that they have a, and again, you know, a clear, compelling, exciting, elevated idea that can sort of drive this for all, because that can sit above all the functional marketing elements. You know, we just finished up the Super Bowl this weekend. I was excited to see the Seahawks win. I'm a Yankees fan, which means I have enmity for Boston inexplicably that travels sports. But you know, what are you going to do? And I live in Westport, Connecticut, that people mistake for New England, which I find deeply irritating. But I thought it was fascinating to see the composition of ads. You know, that used to be sort of the playground of the, you know, so Ramp, a portfolio company of GCs, you know, has been very bold and very thoughtful about, you know, moving into a mass space. Always very thoughtful about sort of what the proposition is and what they deliver, but looking at broader areas. So one, I would say, get your messaging tight and right at the outset. Two, I would say, think about not what are the daily, what's the daily drumbeat of messaging you could put out there, but what are the big swings? You know, what are the big swings to really get on people's radar? And again, I'm not suggesting Super Bowl budgets for early stage companies. That would be irresponsible of me as someone in the ecosystem, and would raise the ire of my partners. But really think about what are the moments that you can own? What are the channels that you can own? What are the forms you can own? And choose to go big in key places as opposed to go steady as she goes in all the usual suspect channels. I think, ironically, for founders that are driving innovation in their own categories so magnificently, there's very little innovation appetite in the marketing formula, largely because it's not their purview, and because the folks they don't have the sort of that the caliber of talent at the early stages who think the way that people like me do. So, you know, I see a lot of steady as she goes, you know, sort of like cadence, and frankly, a lot of it is really forgettable. And the Salesforce need to be supported. It's important to sort of celebrate. And I know early stage companies are building their business one conversion at a time. I'm not suggesting it's not important, but I'm suggesting that there's some, as you think about the sum of the parts, you need to figure out what your big swing's going to be, you know?
So can you any I'm going to put you on the spot, but any examples over the years come to mind where really just great job on behalf of yourself and the founders to
Yeah, well,
execute on an
it's
idea?
frankly it's less in the founder space that I'm seeing it. Ramp is probably the on the cutting edge of sort of really understanding. They did a stunt in the middle of Madison Square Park. They put Kevin from The Office in a box, I think. You know, like they understand that this is an attention economy, and they've been really smart about how to leverage that. And as they've started to scale and they have more of a marketing budget to put behind it, extraordinary opportunity there. And I think they've done the math that says this is a good ROI. But back in the day, brands like REI, the clothing thing, they had a platform called Opt Outside, right? Was their brand platform. And they chose to close on Black Friday. And now because the brand platform was a larger idea about opting outside, it seemed to be an anathema that they would encourage people to come inside to go shopping on that day. And it caught on fire. It really began to cement that platform. It not an not an unconsidered move from a P&L perspective, probably appreciated by their employees, but it what they garnered in engagement and attention and understanding of what they stood for, I think that it well made up for whatever offset launch. So just thinking about, again, I always say if you know what you believe, you know how to behave. If you have a clear point of view about what your brand is about, I think it illuminates opportunities for those companies at even the earliest stages to do something audacious, to do something daring, to do something unignorable through that lens in whatever channel and at whatever price point is. But again, it requires creative thinkers, like the folks at X and O to bring that, because most people don't think that way,
One of the things I heard you just say was positive ROI. And in my experience, again, I'm not a marketer, but it could be difficult to calculate.
Like proving the existence of God.
So what insights would you leave with a founder who's considering a marketing campaign and not sure whether or not they should pull the trigger?
Yeah, like I said, I think my perspective for early stage it's different than for larger organizations. If you look at the history of American Express, that wasn't a parity product; it was a sub-parity product. It was a credit card that costs money that you can use fewer places than other people. It was kind of unintelligible, and the idea of membership that's special somehow like began was a real unlock there, right? And sustain that business for decades, powerfully. So large brands get it, although there's still the CFO conversations like, what am I getting for this? It's like you're getting the lift of a lifetime and the gating factors we talked about. For early stage founders, it's tougher, right? Because the job number one is product market fit before brand market fit, right? You have to sort of do that work first. What I advocate for is do the foundational work, not necessarily in a paid brand marketing program, but do the foundational work so the brand is baked in to your channel, to your premise, and do that early, and then identify the opportunities to pull the trigger to invest in a marketing campaign, in an advertising campaign, in out of home, an event or a stunt or something that, or a big activation at a key, a key convening moment or venue. But without that foundational brand idea and brand kind of toolkit, any of those things are less effective than they would be if and when you decide to pull that trigger. So I think what I'm preaching now to early stage founders is get your story tight and at the right elevation. Engage creative resources that can quickly and inexpensively unlock something that is frankly magical, and then use that as the core to whatever you do. Whatever you do, even if all you do is your website and your channels and your core product marketing funnel stuff, and I think it even gives that a lift. So I think it's really important to get that story sharp and tight and brought to life creatively. And it in my experience, it doesn't just help with a go-to-market strategy in terms of product marketing. It helps in terms of recruitment. It helps in terms of investment strategy. It helps in terms of PR engagement and visibility. And so it's an that product market fit versus brand market fit. I'm advocating for folks to create the tools for that, the brand market fit piece, earlier than they might naturally do, and in a more accelerated way than they currently can do, as a sort of as a foundational element for their growth journey.
And it sounds like it makes a great sense then to engage with someone like yourself at XNO.
I've been really, again, XNO came to me to be part of their network. They said, "Can you," because I'm actually a very talented brand strategist. I don't have many skills, but that's one of them.
Right.
But it was I who said to them, "I'm like, wait a minute, like they're, you need to develop a product for this marketplace. This marketplace doesn't have access to the caliber of talent, and if they were to, it would be at a price point and on a time frame unimaginable, right? Unimaginable. And so, can you break down those barriers and really give, like what can we promise founders in a 4 week period of time? Can you take them from 0 to 60 or 0 to 100, in the context of that?" And I've been really encouraged by that. So yeah, I think it's not an area. By the way, most founders have wonderful brand instincts. They do, because they've narrated, they know their plot twist, they know their enemy, they know the moral of the story. They don't articulate it that way. But they're on a mission to disrupt an industry, to create, to fill a need, to sort of transform the world in some way, shape, and form. I'm so inspired by the founders I have the privilege to work with and know in this ecosystem. It's extraordinary. But they don't have the skill set to take that, which is endemic and inherent, and convert it into something that is overt and obvious. And I think that's where that help is valuable.
You gave me a thought. So I'd love to get your opinion on, early stage companies where the brand is the company versus early stage company where the founder is part of the brand. And I'll tell you who comes to mind is Steve Jobs. The iconic photo of him holding an apple. How do you do you, some people have charisma, some don't. That's fine. Gotta create a whole bunch of different people. How, when you're working with a client, how do you decide to the degree you want to involve a founder with the branding?
That's interesting. Steve Jobs, I remember working in and around Apple at the time. I never worked at Chiat, which was their agency at the time, but they were the gold standard of both product innovation but brand articulation, right? Those two elements that we've been talking about, they did both magnificently and for a very long time. And what's interesting about Steve Jobs, as magnetic as he was, he knew. He brought in the team that created Think Different as the mantra of what this company was really about, right? So while he was emblematic and in many ways inextricably linked to Apple, Apple stood for something bigger. With some early stage founders, I think that's, again, part of the value of creating the brand narrative separate and apart from them is it takes some of the onus off that individual founder or founding team to be the sole spokesperson for the vision and the idea there. So, and again, to your point, some founders are naturals at telling that story and selling that story. And some founders are more natural in terms of the technical aspect of these things. The skill set on any founding team by design needs to be differentiated and sort of and broad. So I think, it's I would rarely advocate for any one individual to become the sole spokesperson for a brand, because the world changes and the world grows, and I think finding, and sometimes it's about taking the founder's values and making those values resilient and redolent within the brand. But it's still, having that mark, having that word, having that those intangibles stand for something. So it's not in conflict with, or in competition with, a vocal founder or a famous founder. But it's it, you're not relying on any one person to sort of carry that load and drive that lift. I think ultimately that's a less successful formula.
I love it. I'm grateful that you had a position on it.
I typically have a position on just about anything.
That's good. Back to General Catalyst. So I'd be curious. I was going to use the word hacks, but maybe I'll say unorthodox means by which you saw General Catalyst be success engaging new LPs.
I had the privilege of working at the time with John Kim, who was their head of IR for many years, and I've never seen anyone more compelling. And his extraordinary team, to really from an IR perspective and from an LP engagement perspective. So it's not real. I'm not really deep in that space, although I would say, like any head of sales and head of marketing. John, who, if you think about LP engagement as being the head of sales, and if you think about being a CMO as the head of marketing, we were very aligned, and I think worked very closely to sort of make sure the narrative that we were developing and telling in the world was one that was consistent with and particularly compelling to limited partners. Again, the things that we're talking about need to serve and suit all the audiences that we touch. And again, there'll be nuances of messaging and there'll be other dimensions of it. But at the end of the day, the brand narrative is the sum of the parts, and it all has to sort of work together as an ecosystem. I mean, GC has been and continues to be extraordinarily bold in the work they're doing. And again, I haven't sat in the CMO seat since September of 2024. But really talk about bold, big swings and big moves, really working to sort of not just back transformation but to drive transformation. And I think that's captivating to any and all, including the limited partners. It doesn't hurt to deliver a fund or two either.
Sure. No, I totally get it. I really enjoyed the conversation. I learned a ton. Before we wrap up, I would love to just dig into some just retrospective reviews. So one of the questions I enjoy asking is, if you had a chance to go back, have a conversation with yourself right when you were starting off on your career journey, what advice or insights would you share with yourself?
That's a great question. It's funny. My husband always tells this story. So I started out, I was an English major at Wesleyan University. I was Phi Beta Kappa, like number three in my class, smart kid, but I wanted to go into advertising. All the investment banks wanted to meet with me just because of my GPA, and I was too stupid to sort of go for the money. I don't think I realized how the world worked. But I started in advertising, in a company called ACNR Advertising. It's long gone, multiple times absorbed into one of the holding companies. But I was an account coordinator on the Estée Lauder business. And the only thing I wanted to do in life was get promoted to an assistant account executive. I just wanted to get that next rung up. And I remember in those days, it was Secretary's Day. Now I was not a secretary, but my team got me soaps. And it made me realize that they think of me as an admin. They don't think of me as an executive on the move. They don't see me that way. And I remember, this is before the days of cell phones. I think I called my husband sobbing, sobbed the whole way home, from Manhattan to Brooklyn, where we were living at the time. And He said to me, he's like, one day you'll grace the cover of Adweek, the new breed. And he was right, eventually. And what I would say to my former, like bet, you gotta bet on yourself. You gotta really know thy strengths, know what you can deliver, and really bet on yourself. I think I would have been more entrepreneurial in my career, and it's been wildly wonderful in every regard. But I think I would have been more entrepreneurial earlier, had I not waited for the validation of whatever team to sort of see me as, I would have been bolder to move in that regard. No regrets on how it all turned out, but really understanding what your superpower is sooner rather than later, and going all in on it with confidence and no fear, I think is a big unlock. That sounds
Yeah.
like Jewish mother advice to my adult children, but it's still it's something I think is that I would tell myself that if I could go back.
Well, I mean, I think it's a really valuable piece of insight for a whole host of reasons. I mean, I have similar conversations with our kids as well. And, the way I frame it is like, what do you have to lose? Sure, okay, fine. Things may not work out as you anticipate, but you're still going to learn a lot. And why not? Why not have a life or an experience where you go big? I can tell you.
If you know you've got the goods to go big,
Yes.
like if you know you got the goods, then go big. If you don't got the goods, I don't know how big you're gonna go. But I think it's an interesting question. It's valuable to reflect on.
Yes. I'd love to give you an opportunity to recognize anyone personally or professionally who's had a material impact on you over the years.
Oh,
Just opportunity to give them a shout out.
that's lovely. I'm going to honor my colleague, my former boss and chairman, Gordon Bowen of McGarry Bowen fame. Talk about folks who recognize your superpower, and giving you an opportunity to do you. Work with him at McGarry Bowen, where Eric was also there for 18 years. It's like
Wow.
a drive. It's like it's, you're legal to vote. That's like a that's an eternity in the advertising industry. And has always been a really extraordinary, supportive, and encouraging partner. He just got admitted into the Advertising Hall of Fame.
Wow.
He many of my colleagues are going to join him in feting that. But there's always one person who sees your superpower before the world recognizes it, and chooses to put it on a pretty important world stage. He brought me to when Ken Chenault called him and said, like, we need to reinvent membership. Gordon brought me into
Oh.
that room and said, and created that times a thousand stages to really shape and influence companies that matter, at least in the dimension of how they show up in the world. So I'm grateful for that. There are so many, but he comes to mind.
All right. Well, shout out to Gordon. I love it. Jennifer, I really appreciate your time. A whole host of great insights here. I found this really valuable. If there are any members of our audience who like to get a hold of you, perhaps engage you as an expert in residence at XNO, how can they find you?
I'm on social media, or what is my email actually? Here, you need to wait for me to answer that.
We can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, you could put it in the show notes. I believe it's Jen at heyxo.co. But I will, it's simple. I'm easy to find there, and anywhere else on social media.
Fantastic. And with that, again, for the benefit of our audience, Jennifer Zimmerman, Senior Marketing Advisor and former Chief Marketing Officer at General Catalyst, currently an expert in residence at XNO. Jennifer, thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it, Christian.
My pleasure. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is at finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.